Well, good morning, everyone, and welcome to the court. We have two cases today, but before we begin, I'd like to say thank you to Senior Judge Crawford for once again being willing to serve as a fifth judge on this court. So our first case today is United States v. Vargas. Captain Flynn, are you prepared to argue on behalf of appellant?
Yes, Your Honor.
And Captain Hemans, are you prepared to argue on behalf of the government?
Yes, Your Honor.
Outstanding. Please proceed.
Chief Judge Olson, Senior Judge Crawford, members of the court, may it please the court. I respectfully request to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal.
Granted.
The plain language of Rule for Court-Martial 701G3D permits military judges, in response to discovery violations, to craft remedies that are just. That is it. That is the only requirement in the plain language of the rule. In this case, the military judge was there. She was with the parties through their motions, through voir dire, through opening statements, and through examination of the first witness. She observed the discovery violation as it occurred and saw how the parties dealt with it. She crafted a remedy that was just. This court should therefore hold that prejudice to an accused and willful misconduct are factors to be considered but are not prerequisites to any remedy or including a dismissal with prejudice.
So, Captain Flynn, if I may, I'd like to really drill down into the text of the applicable RCM in this regard. So, consistent with your position in your brief and this morning, from your viewpoint, RCM G3, 701 G3, in terms of both A, B, and C, don't contain any language that either explicitly or implicitly could be construed as imposing a least drastic remedy requirement.
That's correct, Your Honor. And D in particular does contain some language with that. It does not permit a military judge to exclude an accused from testifying. And then turning to the discussion section, it does not...
First, if I may. So let's focus on G3D, because that's what's at issue here. It's also what was at issue in Stellato, correct?
Correct, Your Honor.
So there the language is, and I want to quote it exactly, that the military judge may, quote, enter such other order as is just under the circumstances, end quote. So in your perspective, what does the phrase as is just mean in the context of this rule?
Your Honor, just, I was able to find used four other times throughout the rule for court-martial, a couple times in military rules of evidence, and a couple times in the code. The most helpful use of just that occurs in the rules, I believe, occurs in Rule 1003 F Charlie 3. And there it talks about crafting a sentence that imposes just punishment. And so when we're looking at a military judge imposing a punishment, we should use the same sort of deference we give to them there in crafting a sentence that we do here in crafting a remedy to a discovery violation.
And in terms of the ability of a military judge to decide how to proceed, the military judge is not required to be restricted simply to curing the error. Military judge, consistent with your argument, has the ability to obtain the desired result. And that desired result can be not only the turning over the discovery material, but additional steps that the military judge feels is appropriate. For instance, it can be making the aggrieved party whole, whatever that might constitute, in the particular circumstances. It could be something such as sending a message either to that offending party or to the bar as a whole that discovery violations won't be tolerated, correct?
Yes, Your Honor.
So, from there, when we're taking those two things together, if a military judge says, I want to accomplish all these things, this is the result I desire to obtain, but then there's this objective requirement to be just. If the military judge is then saying, you know what, I could achieve this goal by, for instance, declaring a mistrial, then if the military judge were to impose something more drastic, such as dismissal with prejudice, would that be just any longer? Or would that, in fact, be capricious unduly punitive and so forth?
Your Honor, the military judge has discretion. I acknowledge that the military judge and concede might not have abused her discretion in this case had she granted a mistrial or a dismissal without prejudice, or even a lesser remedy, perhaps. But she has the discretion to choose within those range of available options. And so if we are admitting that she has discretion, to then cabin that to the least drastic, those two things can operate together. Because
why is that? Because the phrase, as is just, it does not say, as the military judge deems just, which would be much more of a subjective approach, but instead says, as is just, which has a more objective cast to it. And what standard, if we were to take your approach, it seems as if you're saying that a military judge has not only broad latitude, but infinite latitude. How would a CCA review that based on the approach you seem to be taking right now?
The abuse of discretion standard is the correct one with which to review it, Your Honor. It's not that a CCA...
But the standard is there, but what are you using imposing that abuse of discretion standard on when it says as is just?
I believe, as you mentioned, Your Honor, the totality of the circumstances is appropriate. The misconduct, if any, or just conduct generally by the government and trial counsel throughout the case, whatever prejudice that the accused may or may not have suffered, perhaps even it's worth considering if a less drastic remedy would have achieved the appropriate result in any given case. But it's not for a CCA to determine that another remedy would have also been just, or that even another remedy may have been more just. They must determine that what the military judge did was unjust. And using the word just like it does in Rule for Court Martial 1003 FC3, that's a tough standard because she's there. She's seeing what's happening. She's seeing how the parties are reacting. And she's observing what is appropriate in her courtroom, in her jurisdiction, at any given time, Your Honor.
So let's say, for the sake of argument, hypothetical. Military judge says, here's what I'm trying to accomplish. I'm trying to make sure the discovery material is handed over. I'm trying to make the aggrieved party whole. I'm trying to send a message both to this individual who has violated discovery order, send a message to the bar as a whole that it won't be tolerated. And I can achieve that goal by declaring a mistrial. But instead, I'm going to dismiss with prejudice. Would that be just?
I believe there are circumstances in which it could be, Your Honor.
So, okay, that's important. So you're saying military judge places on the record, I can achieve this goal with this remedy, and yet overshoots that. You're saying under the rule that when it says as is just, that's still just, and the CCA would have to ignore what has been placed on the record.
I apologize. I believe I perhaps misunderstood your question. If a judge is placing that on the record, that is an odd thing to do. I'll attempt to work within the hypothetical. I still think, though, I mean, it would be helpful to her decision to articulate why she is going further. You know, if she believes she can achieve her desired result with something less, it would be beneficial to the deference any court gives her. But even if the judge in any given case, or in this case in particular, is given no deference, that doesn't mean that they're necessarily wrong. And so I think that in a situation like that, the remedy is looked at by itself, and perhaps if they're giving an odd reason like that, that would entitle them to much less deference, but it would not necessarily mean the remedy they provided was unjust.
And I understand your point in terms of the deference that needs to be paid to the military judge, and my hypothetical was intentionally a very strict one, but again, if what is the standard that a CCA is using in terms of the abuse of discretion standard, what are they applying that to? Isn't it to this issue of the language saying, as is just, is the requirement when a military judge goes outside of A, B, and C, looks to a remedy under D that says such other order, isn't that what a CCA is required to do, determine what is just under all the circumstances in the context of abuse of discretion?
I would just change the framework of that question, Your Honor. I don't believe that the CCA is required to determine on their own what is just and then see if the military judge abused her discretion. I believe that they're required to determine that the military judge imposed an unjust remedy and why that was an abuse of discretion for her to do so.
Separate from that, when it comes to dismissal with prejudice, isn't that universally recognized in the military system, civilian system, as being a really draconian penalty, step to take by a military judge that is highly disfavored?
Yes, Your Honor. I acknowledge it, and I concede it is the most drastic remedy available to any accused in any case. But just because it's the most drastic does not mean it's wrong in any given case. And it wasn't
counsel,
wrong.
In addition to the difficulties the Chief mentioned with how exactly you reviewing court could determine whether or not the military judge's ruling was just under the circumstances. In this case in particular, it would be particularly difficult for a reviewing court because there's no discussion, right, from the military judge about why her ruling was, in this case, just under the circumstances, right? And we can argue about whether or not she misunderstood the law, but at least on the record, there's no discussion about from her or even really argument from the parties about why this outcome is just under the circumstances. Is that correct?
There's not a whole lot, Your Honor. I do acknowledge that. There is some discussion from the defense counsel about how a lesser remedy is just going to give them more time to prepare. The new counsel at that point are on the case, presumably unfamiliar with the victim, the facts. And so that argument was touched on, but I do acknowledge that the military judge's ruling did not provide a lot of analysis as to that.
Right. But so even, like, why wouldn't it make sense if the parties maybe weren't focused on the right language in the rule and the military judge perhaps wasn't focused on the right language in the rule to send it back for maybe it was just under the circumstances, right? But how can we tell, how could the CCA tell if that's not what the parties are focused on and that's not what the military judge was focused on when she issued her ruling?
Your Honor, that is an ability this court has to order some sort of debate hearing. The record does demonstrate sufficient evidence that this was a just remedy, but if this court determines otherwise, that more facts are needed, that more analysis is needed under a proper standard, not requiring some sort of least drastic remedy like the Army Court was held up on, and even like the military judge here noted and believed, then that is within the discretion of this court, Your Honor.
Captain Flynn, good morning, sir.
Good morning, Your Honor.
At one point in the record, the military judge finds that the failure to disclose was not willful or intentional. I can't remember which term she uses. But then later, when she's making her ruling, she says that she's concluding that dismissal with prejudice is the remedy because of the gravity of the violation. Now, that seems inconsistent, but how are we to reconcile those two statements?
Your Honor, I don't mean to nitpick, and I did
it. Oh, please, have at it.
Yeah, the military judge did not say she found no willful misconduct. She merely said, I do not find willful misconduct. I believe those words do mean different things, and we have to presume that people whose words we are reading are speaking intentionally. And similarly, as this court, or as the military judge in Stellato found no willful misconduct, this court was okay, perhaps not okay with that finding, but it was willing to accept it, but it still was troubled by what was happening in that case. And so I believe that's the area in which we're operating at this time.
Right, but she says that because of the gravity of the offense, but she doesn't tell us why this is so grave.
Your Honor, it's uncomfortable.
It's not your fault. I'm just asking.
Oh, of course, Your Honor. It is uncomfortable to sit here and appear to be passing some sort of judgment on people. I'm a human being myself. I mess things up all sorts of ways. But it is challenging to kind of read this record and hear when the trial counsel initially said, we did not mean to elicit that, which is the first indication that they probably knew, as the defense counsel caught on to then. And then we have this 2 days back and forth with the military judge, which goes on for several pages, and she continually asks these questions. When exactly was it? Was it Monday? It was Monday, yes. Okay, that's the 7th? That's the 7th, yes. And then all of a sudden we have these new trial counsel come in after the military judge dismissed the previous trial counsel, and the first thing they do, much to their credit, is they say, Your Honor, we acknowledge you were told a day that was later, in fact, after a weekend, after a motions hearing that was closed, revolving around the same type of conduct, that was wrong. And so here's the correct date, and we acknowledge you were told that it wasn't written down, and here are the paralegal notes that it was. And so it's tough to imagine where Jiminy Cricket was in this circumstance for the trial counsel, perhaps, and just as limited solely to this case. And so it's good to the government for coming in and clearing up any error, but
let me ask you something. Is the error you're talking about the discrepancy between when the statements by the witness were made and when they, in the trial counsel's statement that it was the other day? Like, for instance, I think the statement was made on a Friday, but the trial counsel, as I understand it, said, no, the statement, we just learned about this statement today or yesterday or whatever it was. And did that kind of get the military judge on edge? Can you tell from the record?
Well, Your Honor, she ended up dismissing the trial counsel from the case even prior to that coming to light. So she already had lost some sort of trust, I would presume. She didn't explain why. But prior to even that happening, and then that language or that disclosure that they were providing this false information to the court over many, many times, which was reaffirmed by both one counsel and then by the more senior counsel on the government side, and even again after a recess, and so it's not like it was just an on-the-spot thing. And so that is perhaps what was going on. And so I believe that is one of the factors that the military judge likely did take into account in determining a remedy that was just. And while I mentioned it is admirable that the new government counsel came in and immediately resolve that error, the government can't just wash its hands of itself because it puts new lawyers on a case. The case is appellant's. This is U.S. v. Vargas. It's not U.S. v. a certain trial counsel. He's the one dealing with it, and the government is the government throughout.
Based on the question or the issue granted, do we have to get into all of that? Isn't the issue granted here really focused on what is the legal standard that the CCA should have applied?
Your Honor, I see my time has expired.
Please do.
That's correct, Your Honor. And I believe the granted issue was whether the Army Court erred in its abuse of discretion analysis. And so those are the factors that the military judge considered, and this court does pierce through to look at the military judge directly, but it can also just clarify for the Army Court and the CCAs.
But isn't that my point, that we don't need to pierce through anything? Based on the granted question, wouldn't we simply determine whether the CCA applied the correct legal standard? If so, game over. If not, we would tell the CCA, here's the correct legal standard, please do it again. No piercing to look at what the substantive decision was made by the military judge, whether that was correct or not.
May I?
Please.
That is another course of action this court could take. That would be appropriate in this case as well.
Thank you. Captain Emmons.
Chief Judge Olson, Senior Judge Crawford, members of the court, may it please the court. Good morning. My name is Captain Tim Emmons. Along with my co-counsel, Major Jennifer Sunduk, I represent the United States. This court should affirm the Army Court, because it applied the law correctly in determining that the military judge abused her discretion in dismissing appellant's case with prejudice.
Can you just pull the microphone down a little bit more? Speak up a little bit. Thank you.
Yes, Your Honor. Is that better?
Yes, thank you.
The military judge's finding or her determination that no remedy short of dismissal with prejudice would have cured the errors that she had identified was unreasonable. It was outside the range of reasonable choices based on the facts before her, and therefore she erred, and the Army Court correctly determined she abused her discretion. Now, in this case, the military judge, she identified three harms to appellant, three areas of prejudice that were caused by this delayed disclosure. And that was that they hampered or foreclosed the strategic options, such as pursuing a negotiated plea or how they were going to present their voir dire or opening statement, hampered the ability to prepare a defense, and that it would have allowed them to rebut the evidence presented by the government more effectively.
Captain Emmons, on that issue, were those deprivations or disadvantages argued to her by the defense counsel, or did the military judge just kind of come up with her own theory of what might have disadvantaged the defense?
I think it was a little bit of both, Your Honor. I think the defense certainly proposed what they felt were disadvantages or what harms were to her. And I think she kind of took those together and summarized them, fitting them into the framework established in Stellato for the questions for the court to consider.
But did the defense request dismissal with prejudice?
Yes, Your Honor. Ultimately, they requested dismissal with prejudice, but they also said in the alternative, mistrial, dismissal without prejudice in this case. But each of those harms that the military judge identified certainly would have been cured by a mistrial. They may have been cured by sanctions less severe than a mistrial, but at least a mistrial would have cured each of those. It would have reset the stage and given appellant the opportunity to pursue those strategic options, to perhaps engage in plea negotiations, to take time to talk to the victim about what the extent of this evidence was and how it might affect their case. And so her determination that a mistrial wasn't enough to remedy those harms that she identified was unreasonable under these facts. Now, appellant has invited this court to determine whether the military judge needs to consider less severe remedies, less drastic remedies. But the court need not accept that invitation, because the court has answered that question multiple times. And it did so explicitly with respect to discovery violations in Stellato. And appellant has argued that was dicta, but it's not clear from that case that it was. Because in Stellato, the issue, it was whether...
Isn't that the problem? Right? You just said it isn't clear from Stellato whether or not it's dicta. Right? There's language in Stellato that arguably supports a least drastic remedy requirement. But there's nothing in Rule 703G that imposes a least drastic remedy requirement. Right? And so there's that tension, right? And so what do we do? Presumably, that's the central issue in this case. So what do we do about that tension?
Yes, Your Honor. And in Stellato, the court recognized that under 701G3D, I believe it is, that it has to be just under the circumstances. And so then it applied that rule to the question of, can dismissal with prejudice be just? And our position certainly is that it's not dicta, that it was central to the holding, because immediately after announcing, yes, dismissal with prejudice is available, is appropriate or may be an appropriate remedy, the court said, and I quote, "We emphasize that dismissal is a drastic remedy and courts must look to see whether alternative remedies are available. We underscore that if an error can be rendered harmless, dismissal is not an appropriate remedy," and ultimately said dismissal may be appropriate if there's prejudice to the accused and no lesser sanction will remedy the prejudice. So that was...
But isn't there a distinction there? There's other case law out there that essentially says all that point, all those points you just made, as compared to this specific RCM 701G3D or the rest of 701G3 with the least drastic remedy. Isn't it like death is different, dismissal with prejudice is different based on a separate line of case law?
I don't believe so, Your Honor. I think answering that question, what is just under the circumstances, the test to apply is what is the least drastic remedy to cure the error.
But where did this phrase least drastic remedy come from? It was not created by this court in Stellato. The military judge in that case indicated, I'm required to impose the least drastic remedy. It appeared as if it was a phrase or a standard that was typical. What is the genesis of that phrase, least drastic remedy, in this context?
Within the military courts, Your Honor, at least going back to U.S. v. Gore, that was the standard, and that was a UCI case. It wasn't a discovery case, but it was dealing with dismissal of prejudice, and it announced this least drastic remedy and then cited the previous cases, and I don't have on the top of my head what those cases were, but for the support that this was the appropriate test. And it can also be seen, the Salado court cites to Ashby, which is a mistrial case, and in that case, the court said, prior to a mistrial, we need to consider whether lesser remedies are appropriate. And so it makes...
But it was not the exact phrase, least drastic remedy.
That's correct, Your Honor. I believe it was...
I don't think Gore used least drastic remedy either, did it?
I'd have to check, Your Honor. I'm not sure if it was lesser or least. And the courts admittedly interchanged those two, consider lesser remedies or apply the least drastic. But certainly, prior to dismissal of prejudice, the court or the military judge needs to consider lesser remedies. And that follows from prior to mistrial, you need to consider lesser remedies.
Is it, though, simply in the context of dismissal with prejudice that a military judge must consider less drastic remedies? Or are you saying that through A, B, and C, also less drastic remedies, within D, when it says other orders, that's when a military judge has to do it? What is your take on that?
I would say at an absolute minimum, when you get to D and you have that phrase, just under circumstances, that's when you need to consider lesser remedies. A, B, and C appear to be more permissive. They don't have that qualifier. But there still is an abuse of discretion standard because it's gives some deference to the military judge or gives them some options. And so perhaps in analyzing A, B, or C, an appellate court might need to apply that less drastic remedy to determine whether the military judge abuses the discretion.
So you say that the military judge must consider less drastic remedies. Two questions arise from that. Is consideration enough? In other words, I'm going to place on the record that I've considered, checkmark, move on, which is different from a must impose the least drastic remedy.
Yes, Your Honor. I think for the word consider to have any meaning at all, then it has to mean impose the lesser remedy. Because
why can't the military judge consider declaring a mistrial and decide that it's not just? And then move on to dismissal with prejudice. Why isn't that perfectly reasonable under the law and the rule as it's written?
I think, Your Honor, under those facts, if the military judge said, I've considered it, and it's not just, it doesn't cure the harm, then they've made that determination. But I think what would be problematic to the chief judge's prior hypo of, I have considered it, and it is just, but I'm not going to apply that remedy. That would not be just, because then the word consider really has no meaning, because if all it is a...
But is that the case before us? Did the military judge say, I'm considering declaring a mistrial, but I don't believe it's just?
It's not, Your Honor, no. But in this case, the military judge's consideration, she said, I considered it, but in fact, if you look at what she did, she either didn't or her ultimate conclusion was unreasonable and was an abuse of discretion based on these facts.
Captain Amos, on the issue of how much discretion the military judge should be afforded, in this case, appellate defense counsel has told me that you had this issue where the trial counsel may not have been very forthcoming about when the statements were made by the witness, or at least when the government knew that they were made. Now, It's not clear, but, and we know that she dismissed the trial counsel from the case. But is it possible, and can you tell from the record, whether or not she used that as one of her factors in consideration before she announced her remedy? And in other words, is the military judge allowed to put into the calculus a punitive measure? In other words, her discontent over maybe less than forthcoming statements by the trial counsel, could she include those in her final ruling? And if she does, should she put that on the record?
Yes, Your Honor, and I'll try and hit each of your questions in turn. So I believe your first question was, is it clear from the record? And it's certainly not. The military judge, as you pointed out in your question to appellant counsel, she said the gravity of the violation in this case, without more. So it's not clear from the record. But this court has certainly suggested that, bad faith may be an important and central factor in doing this determination, and that was in Stellato that the court said that. And so if you compare this military judge's findings of facts in this case with the military judge in Stellato, you'll see that the judge in Stellato made extensive findings of fact, found that there was continual and egregious violations, nature, magnitude, and consistency, recklessly cavalier, systematically ignored, made all of those findings on the record that would have supported those being valid considerations in the ultimate remedy. But those are all absent in this case. The finding of fact that's before this court is the finding that the military judge did not find willful misconduct. And so that is what the military judge has told us about how she viewed the government's actions, and that's what should control in the analysis. An appellant has suggested that the imposing the least drastic remedy or considering lesser drastic remedies would somehow bind the hands of the military judge, but that's simply not the case. The military judge still has broad discretion as to what is within that range of reasonable, but in this particular case, she went outside of that range, and that's why she abused her discretion, and that's why the Army Court was correct in setting aside her findings. And I'll pause there.
Counsel, will it always be possible to determine what is the least drastic remedy? So, for example, suppose the defense asks for continuance so they can interview the witness, and the judge says, how long do you need? And they say 4 days. And the government says they only need 2 days. Does the judge only give them 2 days in that case because it's the least drastic remedy? And does the Court of Appeals say, well, a day and a half would have been fine? I mean, it seems to me that shouldn't just the test be, is this within the range of reasonable choices as opposed to the least drastic?
I think it can be both, Your Honor. I think under those facts, your hypothetical, if the military judge finds under these facts they need 4 days, then she has satisfied that requirement of considering the least drastic remedy and applying it. And so she would be given broad deference, abuse of discretion.
But then don't we really need to have on appeal a contested question? Is 4 days really what they needed as opposed to was 4 days reasonable? Because if they only really needed 2 days, it just seems like the range of reasonableness ought to be the test. And don't you win even if we don't require the least drastic remedy?
Yes, Your Honor. And I think, again, I think it can be both. I think the range of reasonableness, that is built into the standard, and the judge should be given broad discretion or broad deference, in determining what is reasonable under those facts. But to answer your second question, yes, Your Honor. Under these facts, her determination, at least that a mistrial was not enough, was outside the range of reasonable choices.
So then, from your viewpoint, there's no reason to die on this hill of least drastic remedies. It's not in the text of the rule. You seem to be saying on behalf of the government that using the standard of within the range of reasonable choices is an appropriate approach. And you seem to be indicating that in this particular case, the government would still prevail. So should we then, this court, return this to the CCA and say that Stellato was wrong in terms of indicating that the least drastic remedy is the requirement, go back to more typical law of saying abuse of discretion standard, you're looking at the range of reasonable choices, CCA, apply that standard here?
And, Your Honor, if I gave the impression that I don't think the least drastic remedy is the appropriate test, then that's my mistake. Well, I think what I was trying to account for is that the military judge should be required to determine what is the least drastic remedy. Then when you get on appeal, you apply the abuse of discretion standard to that determination. And that standard recognizes, okay, when the military judge said this was least drastic, she had a range. It would have been reasonable if it was a little less, reasonable if it was a little more. Hers was within that range, so it was an abuse of discretion.
I think what we're wrestling with is simply the issue of where does, quote-unquote, least drastic remedy come from? It is not in the text. And as Justice Kagan has said, we're all textualists now. And when you look back at case law, this seems to have sprung up in Stellato based on what the military judge had stated in that case was his duty. But it doesn't appear to be in any of the prior case law. So how can we stand on that ground when it seems like very shifting sand, as compared to going back to the typical standard of within the range of reasonable choice?
I think, Your Honor, the test, this lesser, must consider lesser remedies, certainly has been around for some time, and that appears in both military cases and other federal cases. And so whether the...
Now, not to be picky, but is that in the context of dismissal with prejudice, you must consider lesser remedies? Or are you saying that that's true throughout 701G?
The military cases that come to mind right off the bat, we're dealing with either dismissal or with mistrials. But certainly looking at the federal cases, dealing with much lesser remedies, such as just excluding evidence, or some other sanction, then they have also applied this must consider lesser remedy test. And that can be seen, and I'll quickly go through them, in the D.C. Circuit and Gray Burris, and these are all cited in the briefs. In the Third Circuit in Fahy, they suggested that you must consider the lesser remedy. And those were not dismissal cases. Those were cases where... Fahy was a dismissal. But then U.S. v. Wellborn, which is the Fifth Circuit, also least drastic remedy. U.S. v. Davis, Eighth Circuit, one of the three prongs in their test was will lesser remedies. And then finally U.S. v. Wicker, Tenth Circuit, also applied that similar three-prong test. And that three-prong test was cited favorably by this court in Stellato. And so I think that it has broad application. And I see my time's up, so pending any further questions.
Any other questions from the bench? Thank you, Captain Emmons.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Captain Flynn.
Yes. 3 minutes.
I'd like to pick up where my colleague left off discussing a range of reasonable options. And that is an appropriate analysis for military judges to be told they must perform, for CCAs to kind of operate under as well. This least drastic, you're correct, Chief Judge Olson. The military judge said it at trial in Stellato, believing that's what he must do. The military judge said it here, and so that is belief, while they're maybe attempting to keep things as fair in a sense as they can. That's just not required. And that's not really the fairness that a court-martial is after. It's not the same thing as an athletic event or a football game where you flip a coin and both teams kind of start at zero. It's a general court-martial where appellants could go to jail for decades or potentially lose their lives. So the government has all of the burden. It's their obligation to get it right and get it right from the start. And everybody makes mistakes. We're all human beings. But it's their job to try to correct them as quickly as they can and as well as they can. My colleague, I believe, also makes the same error that the Army Court did, referring to the least drastic remedy and really focusing on that being appropriate. And what I struggle with most with that, and what the government, my colleagues on the other side, don't even appear to refute, is what about cases of egregious, willful misconduct where exculpatory evidence is clearly withheld by an officer or lawyer just because they want to win? And a DNA report or something like that, if it's just the least drastic remedy, well, try again, you know, next time. Here's a mistrial. And that offends, I think, the reasonable person's sense of what is just under any circumstance. And those situations would really conflict with the rule. Finally,
Counsel, you're not trying to say that this situation, or maybe you are, but tell me, that the information or evidence that came to light in this case is anything like the kinds of evidence or situations you've just rattled off, right?
No, it's not, Your Honor. It is not to that extreme, but that interpretation of least drastic remedy would lead to those results, and that's my concern. Hmm. And finally, my colleague suggested that perhaps ABC of 701G3 would entitle a military judge to more deference. That's just not how I read those portions of the rule. In fact, in D, it talks about least drastic remedy there. So, and that's only in regard to the discussion portion, excluding a defense witness. And so because the just remedy portion itself for other things are not really excluded, I believe that would be given more deference than perhaps A, B, and C. Pending any further questions from this court.
Any questions? Okay, thank you. The case is now submitted. The court thanks counsel for both sides, and the court will stand in recess until 10:25.
Thank you.